one of our wacky new bits that we're doing is the Hang Zone, where we will invite somebody on for an hour to hang. Talk about whatever we're talking about. Today's guest. Is Mike Reiner, the Hardline. Inventor of the Hardline. Let's dock with Mike Reiner. Join together. And latch on to each other. Mike, do you read me over?
Affirmative, Mr. Dan. Copy loud and clear. Interrogative, do you copy over?
Mike.
The weather is changing out there, Mike.
Mike.
The weather is changing out there, Dan. But let me tell you boys something. Two guys, two girls is not an orgy.
That's what I said.
No, it's not an orgy.
Okay. Let me dance around the particulars here.
Three and three, I'd say yes.
No.
Oh, geez. 70s no. Mike. The Hot Tub Club Mike. What if it's two and two, but, like, the women are involved with one another? You know
That's
what I mean?
Just an, yeah, I know.
And what
yeah,
are the
I
dudes
believe,
doing?
I believe I do know what you mean. Well, the dudes just sit back and watch and dig it all.
Well, That's they're involved, they too, but it's like a female version of docking, but... Not,
it's still not an orgy, but it's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, and if the guys want to get involved with each other, well, nobody says you can't.
That's 70s Mike right there.
That's right. Hey,
man.
It is full throttle, wide open, anything goes. But two on two is just a scene we've all been involved in some point in our lives. That is not an orgy.
But if you agree, if I make the Matrix 3x3, you're saying now.
No.
Okay, Dan has stopped at that mark, and Mike needs double. He needs double digits to.
No, I need upwards of five or six.
Yeah, but
or I guess 10 or 12.
Oh,
then you got an orgy, or I don't know. Maybe eight. Maybe eight would work. Maybe 8 to 10 would work.
So, a lot of people will see a news story. The first of its kind, I believe, was the Astros cheating scandal. And when that all got blown wide open, and people I saw were interacting with Mike on social media and saying, man, it's times like this. I just wish we had Mike here, you know? I know this is a story you'd love to weigh in on. I didn't really feel like that until the Earl Thomas story came out.
Oh, boy. Guess who the first guy I thought of was?
Oh, it means a lot to me.
Yeah, that would be you. And you handled it absolutely defiantly. I just wish I could have been there, too.
Hey, I forgot. Before we move on, we haven't found out what day it is yet. I have no idea what day it is.
Because the Hang Zone could be any day.
Right.
It's not really Ticket Tuesday. It's not Friday follow-up.
And now, Quarantine Bad Radio proudly presents What Day Is It?
Today is Thursday.
This has been What Day Is It? Exclusively on Bad Radio.
Today I was on it. There have been plenty of days when I was not. You guys are providing a valuable service there.
What do you think of us still calling this Bad Radio and the Hardline still calling it the Hardline?
Old things die hard, don't they?
Like,
I don't
do you
know.
Think if we it, should?
Well, if it were me, I would rebrand, but that's just me. It's not me.
That's
you.
The way I'm feeling. We thought we'd organically feel it out.
Well, yeah, that's probably
the way the wind is
the
blowing
play.
In my head right now. Is
That's right. That's probably the play, you know. Things evolve when things were good around there. They're not now, but when they were, they always happened in a very organic way. They happened in their own way, in their own space, their own time. Nobody was beating down on us, telling, hey, what are you guys going to call this thing? Are you going to rebrand it? What are you going to do here? Figure it out. I want something by a close of business tomorrow.
COB.
By COB tomorrow. There was none of that. You know, it all happened when it happened.
Well, as a fellow member of our club, what if we were to honor Kobe and call the show the Girl Dads?
Super gay.
Maybe we'll just call it that. Super gay.
Yeah, maybe you should.
Super gay radio.
You guys could call it the Girl Dads because that's what you are.
Yeah. Hey, we are in a fraternity with you.
Yes,
hashtag
that's
girl
right.
Because you can't be a girl dad if you also have boys.
No, right. You can't. If you're a girl dad, you're a girl dad all the way.
You don't know our pain. Our
Right.
Our struggle.
That's right. Only we can relate.
I did something this morning, Mike, very early, which I think is the only time you're able to do this, that I'm wondering if you're interested in it at all, and that is Asian baseball. I watched a little KBO this morning, and I got to tell you, I don't hate it at all. It's an aggressive style of play.
It's different. It's way different. I haven't taken too deep a dive into it over the years, but every time I have wandered over that way, I come away going, yeah, this is all right. I don't hate it either.
Yeah, I mean, it appears to me they don't want to walk.
So is the style of, because no. I am not interested generally in minor leaguers or high school baseball or whatever. So you're saying the style of play is different enough that you could be, you're watching kind of a different game.
It seems like they
like if you would have watched the Negro Leagues of the 40s or something like that, where they're playing the same game, but they come at it from a different angle.
It seems that way to me. It seems like guys don't want to walk. They want to run as much as they can. They have no problem with showboating.
Don't want to walk, like take a base on balls?
Yeah, like they swing. And the pitchers look very aggressive and just pounding the strike zone as well. It moved pretty fast, and I really like Carl Ravitch. He was on the call, so that might have had something to do with it. But
yeah.
I enjoyed my time with it this morning.
I know every time I've seen it in recent years, I come away thinking that this is a league full of Shinsu Chus because they all play like him. They all battle. Their approach at the plate is like him. Shinsu gets up there, and he's ready to get on with this thing. You know? He is ready to get on with this thing, but he's also very selective, and he's great at fouling off pitches, which a lot of those guys are. They have that Ichiro Shinsu-type swing that enables them to, when they see a pitch they don't like, but it might be a strike, but they don't think they can really hit it, they're able to just get enough of it to foul it off. That's a skill, man.
You know what they say? You don't walk off the island.
No, you don't walk off the island.
no matter which one. I don't.
Yeah, no matter which island it is, you ain't walking off of it.
Still. This is something I wanted to talk to you about, too, and we're going to do some Jordan talk at 1:55. But last week, the Mavericks celebrated the organization's 40th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at some news stories published around that, and then looking at some stuff that our friend Mike Marshall was putting together over there. And I was seeing some images.
The machine.
The machine. The great machine. Some videos and images.
Machine.
Have you turned into a machine fan?
I have. I was on a podcast with him the other night, and I thought he was great.
Because I remember a day when we were ordering sushi in California, when you followed Machine on Twitter just so that you could block him or unfollow. Like, you wanted to send a message that you were tired of the machine and all he stood for.
Well, I've come around on that since then. That was a different me, Dan.
Yeah. I know. We're all very different than we used
I'm a
to be.
I'm a changed man, Dan.
But you have a few of those stories that I always love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do have a few of them. I'm not proud of them either.
So the man who walked the long walk and got to his destination, the machine, shared with me some Don Carter images and video, and he really looked and sounded to me like baby Billy Freeman from The Righteous Gemstones. Walton Goggins' character, which I don't know if you stuck with that show or not, Mike, but...
Yeah, I did.
His hair, his way of speaking, and the things that he would speak about, and it jogged my memory to the time that I think you've once... I swear I've heard you say before that early on, Don Carter and his family were very devout evangelical Christians, mm-hmm. and they at least floated the idea when the Mavericks joined the NBA... that they wanted to be the first and only NBA team comprised solely of evangelical Christian basketball players. Is that true?
This is true, yes. This idea is true, and it made its way out there into Gen Pop, but only for a few days. It never really went very far. Now, Norm Sanju was a pretty big shotgun rider in all this, too. I don't know if you know the backstory of Norm Sanju. For those who don't know that name at all, he was the Mavericks' first general manager. And without him, there are no Mavericks. Mm-hmm. There may not be basketball here in our Fairburg, but Norm Sanju is the guy who pretty much made it all happen back in the day. The Buffalo Braves were about to move down here. He had been the Braves general manager for a few years, and their owner was John Y. Brown, the governor of Kentucky. Not at that time, but later on, he would become governor of Kentucky, and he would also marry Phyllis George. And he was the owner of the Braves. Well, he and another guy who owned the Celtics swapped franchises, which left John Y. owning the Celtics. And this other guy, Irv Levin, was the now the owner of the Buffalo Braves. Well, he was just almost immediately ready to get that thing out of Buffalo because it had just kind of hobbled along. You know, that had good years. This is the late 70s. This is probably
swapping 70. Franchises was a thing.
Yeah, this. Yeah, it was, like wives, Dan.
Yeah, but it would happen. Like, I'm pretty sure
that happens too.
In the NFL, right?
What, franchise swaps?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Georgia Frontieri, or didn't somebody swap NFL franchises at one point? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I don't know. They might have.
Look that up.
I don't know. Okay, look that up. Well, Irv Levin wanted to get the thing out of Buffalo because, you know, they were just kind of a middling franchise, and that had some good players over the years, some good teams over the years, but, you know, they were kind of like the Mavericks. For a long time, there was always somebody around that was a little bit better than they were, a little bit more high-toned than they were. And those teams would just chew up the Buffalo Braves once they got them into the playoffs, despite the presence of Bob McAdoo, Randy Smith, Ernie DiGregorio, and a number of other really good players over the years. Well, Irv Levin started looking to move the team, and he sent Norm out to find a place for relocation. And Norm started looking around, and he looked here in Dallas. He came down here and started talking to people who might be able to help him. He had a willing counterpart in the Dallas scheme of things, and that was the mayor, Bob Folsom, at the time, who really wanted to get an NBA team down here and was all up behind this and told him that I will do whatever I can to get an arena built and to make this thing happen if you guys will move down here. And so Norm went back to Irv Levin and told him, I've got just the place for us. We need to go to Dallas. And for a good time, it looked like that might actually happen. Well, something happened between Irv Levin and Norm. They kind of fell out. Norm was not with them anymore, and Irv Levin decided the place for him, instead of Dallas, was San Diego. And he moved them to San Diego, and you know them today as the Los Angeles Clippers. Meanwhile, Norm was still down here, and he was still hell-bent on bringing basketball to Dallas. He was going to do everything he could to make it happen. And he was working the room. He was talking to guys who might be prospective owners and everything like that, and trying to give them an idea of the lay of the land of the NBA at that time, which was not particularly pretty. And nothing like it is now. But he happened to run across Don Carter, who was a guy who liked basketball. His wife really liked basketball. That helped matters considerably. And the two of them got to know each other. They bonded over Christianity and everything like that. Don Carter wound up buying the team, and the idea was going to be that they were going to have the first Christian basketball team in the NBA, and not only that, the first Christian team in sports, in any of the four major sports. And to show just how ready they were to do that, the first guy they signed was Ralph Drollinger. Does that name mean anything to you?
Never heard of it.
Ralph Drollinger had played 4 years at UCLA. He was a 7-footer. Which immediately made him the coin of the realm in the NBA, no matter what else he might or might not have had. And the Mavericks signed him as a free agent, despite the fact that he had been out of school for 3 years. He had been drafted into the NBA three times by three different teams, and each time he had turned them down to go play with Athletes in Action, which was, you know, a big Christian amateur basketball organization, one of the, probably the biggest in the nation at that time. Still may be, I don't know. But the Mavericks started telling him things that he wanted to hear, like, hey, we want you to be the centerpiece of our all-Christian basketball team. And that was that's all it took to get Ralph Drollinger on board. So he signed with them, and they went off from there. Now, there were two mitigating factors here that would later turn up into play. Number one is the fact that Ralph Drollinger could not play at all. He played five games. His NBA career lasted five games with the Mavericks. His career high was a whopping 8 points. He was deficient in every way a basketball player could be deficient. And early that first year, he had a debilitating knee injury that pretty much ended his career anyway, at least on the NBA level. He might have played a little bit more in some other Christian organizations. I don't know, but his NBA scene was over then. And the other thing that short-circuited the idea was that they were going to have to go find a coach, and it's not real easy to find a Christian NBA coach. And the guy that they wound up with, even though to this day he remains one of my favorite figures that we've ever had on the sports scene around here, he was anything but a Christian. And that guy was Dick Motta. And I don't know, I guess in talking with Dick Motta, that sort of got Don Carter off the Christian idea a little bit, you know, to where he decided that if he was going to own this thing and buy this thing, which by that time he already had, it was completely underway. He was all in at that point. And he decided, well, the first thing I got to do is get this thing up and running. We'll worry about the other stuff later. So they brought Dick Motta on board, and the Christian idea, despite making its way out into the knowledge of Gen Pop to a certain extent, and lasting a few news cycles, that sort of went by the by. And you know the rest of the story.
Man, that's amazing.
Yeah.
The fact that they even considered it, the fact that they got a guy who was touring with an evangelical basketball team and he managed to play five games, the fact that somehow it made it far enough that you know about it, how they plan to vet these people, the sort of purity test would have been. Amazing.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, there are many, many unanswered questions here.
Well, stay with us in the Hang Zone. Mike Reiner will be here.
I kind of like this Hang Zone.
As we do the 1:30 news next. Velvet. Mike Reiner is hanging with us for an hour.
Yeah.
We are now going to do the 1:30 news with Jake.
Take it in. Hey, Mido. Raising Cane's. Well, it is now a national story, boys. It's the talk of the country.
Earl Thomas?
Dallas salon owner, Shelley Luther. Mike.
Yes. I've been following this. I've been following this because I really need a haircut.
Oh, wow. Would you know when your last one before the quarantine was?
Yeah, it was right before it. I got one right before it happened.
Any thought of just buzzing it all?
No.
Didn't Howard didn't Howard go burr cut? Or do I have that remembered incorrectly?
No, Howard never went burr cut.
But he'd throw you one in the summer, right?
Well, I volunteered for it. They convinced me that it would be cooler. You know, it wouldn't be quite as hot if I got
it's true.
What hair I had cut off. And I thought, okay, why not? So I went down to Swindle's barber shop and gave them a quarter, and they gave me a burr.
Well, I've been following this story not only because of the need for haircuts, but also because, as Junior Miller would say about a news story, I'm very interested in this story. Shelley Luther, let's just state the facts. She's hot. She's a hot hairstylist owning, protest the government, rip up a cease and desist.
Yes, off the pigs.
Yeah.
Stand up to the man.
She's 46 right now, which I think we all know where I stand on that.
Perfect. Perfect.
Had she remained incarcerated with her 7-day sentence, she would have turned 47 on Sunday in jail.
And probably would have caught the Roni.
Mother's Day, no less. That's right. Now, we saw that there was some...
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Ty.
Some legal wrangle as the Attorney General of Texas... Or do I have that wrong? Yeah, Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, and the Governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, said, hey, let her go. Let our people go. Several circuit judges in the Dallas area said no. As of now, the Supreme Court of Texas, as of about, I don't know, an hour and a half ago, has ordered the release of jailed Texas stylist Shelley Luther. I don't have word on whether Shelley. She has been exactly let out or not, but to show support for Mrs. Luther, last night at her salon in North Dallas, former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin stopped by. Get herself a little
Jake.
Cut color.
Oh, Sarah Palin was here?
Palin.
That's right. Sarah Palin, who in Nayland Palin once met with the Black Caucus of Congress. That is an actual scene. I could review it for you sometime if you'd like to revert back to that Earl Thomas segment about how many...
So was she already here? She mobilized?
I don't know that for sure, but I know that she's the type
Flights
of person...
Flights are very cheap.
Yeah, and we should probably fly private, but she could insert herself into this news story, much like the Black Caucus once upon a time inserted themselves into that news story. You get on the private jet, you get to town, and... You do the press photos and get a haircut right away, right? I mean, it's a national story. Now you want to be part of it.
Well, this chick is genius in the first place, Shelley.
Absolutely.
Just for doing this.
Her boyfriend.
Her business is going to boom.
Boom! On top of that, in addition to the booming business, her GoFundMe has raised its $500,000 goal. And the man who set it up says they will be raising the limit. They're going to give it a couple days. And raise it again. Now, what we were discussing yesterday...
Their hairdressers are going to be in mansions.
Right.
With gold showers.
What we did not consider...
Fur showers.
Yesterday, when thinking of what are they going to do with all this money, I think the answer is they're probably going to try to take this through several layers of courts, right? And you're going to need lawyers for a year as this ends up going to... I don't know how all that works, but...
Take what through courts? Now over.
But just the statute itself that allowed her to first be incarcerated, I guess. I don't know. But $500,000 seems...
But like you said, in the future, Republicans who are running for whatever are going to stop. When they're in Dallas for a stop, they'll stop and get their hair cut there.
I want to see Mike there.
I need to be there.
Yeah. You can ask
I need to
where,
be somewhere.
Where Mrs. Palin... I want to sit where she sat.
Yeah.
Did Sarah get a haircut?
I think so. I guess it just says she stopped by the salon, so I'm not totally sure. But
would you like a lock of her hair?
Of which type?
Dang.
She might have only one.
Now, I think this story is also of interest to Mike, because in this article about Mrs. Luther... Maybe it's Miss, I don't know. In the morning news, they spoke to her her boyfriend. She's been divorced a couple times, they say, and they met in the last maybe year. He had just come out of a divorce as well. I think she has two daughters. He has one son. They met playing in bands together. So, website was sent to me, crushbandusa.com. I believe the band is called Crush.
Is that like Crush Films?
I don't think so. That's you. What a weird time on the station where you guys were obsessed with Crush Films for about 18 months, and you were trying to get Alexis from traffic to put on high heels and kill a squirrel.
I think she was crushing video. Hamsters.
Okay.
Yeah, it was hamsters.
It was only a hamster.
If you go to crushbandusa.com, you will see that they have a weekly slot at Sidecar Social in Dallas on Wednesday nights. And you can also see YouTube videos of Miss Luther.
How is she? Is she good?
You know, pretty good. It looks like they play, and I mean no disrespect here, they play the petty theft circuit. Looks like they'll play at your corporate event or party, or local bars and restaurants. Yeah, they're pretty good. And she's up there, knee-high boots. And
is she better than Romo singing with whatever band he sang with?
Metal School. No need to besmirch the good name of Metal School. But yeah, apparently she's about to get out, and she will be running for vice president in the next 8 to 12 years. Right?
Gotta be.
We all know this.
She's Shelley Long or Shelley Winters. What's her name?
Shelley Luther.
Shelley Luther.
Shelley Winters.
Shelley Long.
I guess she can get back to playing those gigs now if she's out. And
so she's out.
At him, this guy.
I don't know, man.
I guess that's true.
Not too many gigs to be had these days.
Any sort of prediction on that front, Mike? When will we have gigging back? You think a month and a half? 2 months?
I don't know. I've pretty much given up on May. Looking at June, we'll see what happens then.
Should Dallas have just not sent her to jail? Like, obviously, they put this desist thing, and most people just followed it. Like, everybody followed it.
Yeah, almost everyone, but yeah.
But if you didn't follow it, you didn't go to a rally and rip it up publicly.
Right.
You just didn't follow it.
Or, yeah, you just did it in your home. Like, I definitely have heard of people who cut hair that are on the low just saying, hey, come to my house.
Yeah.
Or come to your house. A lot of them.
Hey, Jake, I'm seeing a picture from Channel 11. A bunch of media is gathering outside Dallas County Jail where she is about to be released.
See, it's now a big... If you want to give you 15-second snapshot of what I think should have happened, to go too down the poly road here, the federal government should have absolutely made it mandatory that a bank can't foreclose on you or bring your loan into default. And you're just going to suspend payments until your business is back open, which they definitely could have done and just tacked it on to the end. So she shouldn't have had to been worrying about whether or not she was going to lose that building. She shouldn't have to been worrying about whether or not her employees were going to be paid, because that could have been done.
Just pushed
instead,
it to the end.
They just turned us all against one another.
If you have a
20-year
mortgage or whatever, you're...
20 and 3.
It's now these 3 months are off.
Right.
You just add it to the end. And
this is interest, but...
You're still going to get money.
Right.
We're all going to... You'll get through this time. We're going to get our money in the end.
Right. Just wait.
You're not forgiving the loan.
Right.
You're just...
That definitely could have been done. And had that been done, then we wouldn't all have to bicker at each other quite as much about opening or not opening.
So banks could do that on their own. There's just been no mandate to do it.
They could do it on their own. They never would, though. But it would be nice. Would have been nice if the Fed said, hey, no, you have to do it. But then we don't get this woman who, in my mind, now knows Sarah Palin, tearing up a cease and desist.
Yeah, she all bummed out. She was in jail. She didn't get to meet Sarah Palin.
You will see a photo with the two of them by COB tomorrow.
So Sarah Palin's in Dallas now.
Maybe. Maybe, Mike.
Let's go find her.
Maybe she's listening.
Let's go find her.
Think she's tuning in?
Hey, now.
Well, if she is, I love you.
Stay hard, Sarah.
All right, coming up next... Let's get into The Last Dance with Mike. Let's talk Gambling Jordan.
How old is she?
She's 46 right now.
I like to get the years. Putting Shelley Luther's birthday in my birthday list. So we'll have it next year.
It's 154. It's Dan and Jake here on The Ticket. Joining us in the Hang Zone
for
our third and final segment. It is The Godfather. Mike Reiner. Also learning about Shelley Luther and her boyfriend from Crush Band, that they own tons of exotic animals.
Oh, yeah?
No way!
Yeah, I was going to say, which is, if you're looking for all of the elements of crazy that might make you a little more interested but also leery in the opposite sex, willingly...
Are we talking about snakes or panthers or bears or what?
Here. They own, it says here, a wallaby they recently posted a video of named Scooby-Doo. A lemur, 6 horses, 3 mini horses, 2 donkeys, 11 goats, 3 ducks, 6 dogs, and a...
Man, that's a farm.
A wallaby, the lemur, and a Bengal cat.
100% chance she's met Joe Exotic.
Right?
There is no doubt.
Do you think she could use her clout to get him out? Just have them both touring the nation together, speaking about injustice. So,
had the Crush band open for it.
I'm in heaven. Hog heaven. I think the first time I ever heard anyone with a cynical take on Michael Jordan and his public persona, I think it might have been Hardline 1.0. I think it might have been Mike and Greg who first put the idea in my head of, we're not discussing whether or not he's the greatest, although at that time he might have still been competing with Wilt or I don't know. But it was more about, this guy is a disingenuous, I don't remember how you focused a lot on the gambling element of it and him having to go play baseball. And I'm not sure if you even necessarily believe that one, that he was forced to go play baseball because of the gambling debts. I troll people with it, but what I definitely believe and what I read a lot more about refreshing myself on it after the episode 5 and 6 last Sunday of The Last Dance on ESPN, Mike, was it's really kind of shocking how close to pretty serious criminal elements Michael Jordan was flying during a 5-year stretch there in his career. Yeah, you could take it from there before I get into these other details.
He was hanging with pretty edgy cats all the way around. And a lot of this is focused on whether or not Michael Jordan was addicted to gambling. And I don't know, addiction is something that I'm really not terribly well versed in because I don't have an addictive personality myself. Anything I've ever done, I could stop and start whenever I wanted to, and I really don't understand those who can't. But I don't think he was addicted. I think he did it.
You quit smoking in a day, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I decided I looked stupid when I smoked cigarettes, and I put it out, and I haven't touched one since.
Amazing.
But I don't think he was addicted to it. I think he did it because he liked it, and solely because he liked it. I think he liked the juice of it. Do I think he was addicted to the juice? No, not really. I think Michael Jordan's a strong enough personality and is of strong enough fiber to where he can start and stop something anytime he wants to. But I think he did it just because he liked it.
Do you believe he left the NBA for the commonly believed reasons?
You will never convince me of that. You will never, ever convince me of that. I think he left the NBA because the NBA told him, you're too hot to handle. You got to go away for a while.
Which, even that, I have trouble because I kind of believe that I'm kind of with you in that there's just no way. He would just leave on his own. He was at the top of...
He was at the top of his game. He loved it too much. Now, if you want to talk about something he might be addicted to, that was winning. And he loved winning. He loved being the best that there was out there. He loved being able to control a game. He loved being able to make anybody who he wanted to look stupid and silly. And he loved letting all those guys out there on the floor know that no matter what they did, no matter how great they were, no matter how great they thought they weren't as good as him, and they never would be.
And at the time that he did that, they had won 3 in a row. And as I'm learning in this documentary from not remembering all of it at the age I was when it was happening, he now had gotten past... like the Pistons, there had only been 2 franchises who had ever won more than 2 in a row. And now it was just the Lakers, the Celtics, and the Bulls who had ever won 3 in a row. And as I recall, people like Mike Reiner's age were probably throwing around, look, slow down on greatest ever. you've never seen a guy named Bill Russell play. And I feel like that I'm Mike Reiner now when people are saying LeBron was the greatest or whatever. And I got to think in his mind, he's now playing history, and maybe I'll reel off as many victories in a row as Bill Russell had to shut those people up.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things.
But instead, he leaves the game.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that was really driving him. And if that's what's driving you, do you disrupt that in midstream just because you want to go play baseball?
And then you couple that with just how, you speak of how hot it was, the fact that he retired within a year of everything that had become public. Whether you believe the Michael and Me book or not, you know, the guy did have to testify in court regarding a money, gun, and drug laundering, you know, trial for that, for Slim, a guy who had a $57,000 check in his possession from Jordan that when first asked about it, Jordan said was a loan. And then whenever he actually had to go, answer for it under oath, said, yes, I owed him some money. I owed him a lot of money, and I owed him money because I got in over my head gambling. Well, that guy's real job was coke running in addition to golf hustling. He was a bag carrier for coke dealers. That's the guy he was gambling with. That's the guy he owed the money to. I'm not saying Jordan was involved in drugs or anything like that at all, but you had that. You had the guy who was found murdered that, you know, Jordan allegedly owed money to.
So, I don't know about that.
Which one? That one was Dow, right? Eddie Dow, a bail bondsman. He had three checks from Jordan totaling $108,000 in his possession when he was murdered in a home invasion in February of 92. Certainly not saying Jordan had anything involved with, you know, the guy's death, but the type of people who end up bail bondsmen who get murdered in home invasions and coke runners who get popped on laundering charges, if those are the people that you're gambling with, I don't think it's crazy at all for the league to have said, you really have to stop. This is going to screw the, you know, the gravy train up if your image becomes this. Yeah. So it always made a little sense to me, and I was at least, you know.
But, Mike, how does your conspiracy theory play with what if he says no? What is the NBA saying? We're going to suspend you?
I doubt it. I mean, he probably could have played hardball right back at the NBA.
And, like Shelley Luther.
Yeah, like Shelley Luther, and told him, no, I'm going to open the salon anyway. I don't care what you say.
Like call their bluff.
Yeah, he could have called their bluff, and I don't think they would have done anything. But the thing about it is, this came at a time when the NBA had finally gotten the upper hand in turning around its image. And when David Stern took office, when David Stern became commissioner of the NBA, that was pretty much job one for anybody who was going to come into that job. You had to do something about the image of the NBA because it was terrible. I mean, they were wanting to, you know, gain bigger business footings or bigger business toeholds and with sponsors and just ramp up the business aspect of the NBA in a far greater way than it ever had been before. And with the image of the NBA at that time, that was not going to happen.
As far David as Stern, fights and drugs and...
Yeah, and just everything bad you can think of. David Stern had to get that turned around, and he'd started doing that. He was fairly well along that trail when this came up. But, man, this... I just wonder what it was like in David Stern's house that night when he picked up the phone, and I don't know who it would have been, maybe a law enforcement guy, maybe one of his underlings, maybe somebody deep on the inside of the league who handled stuff like this for him. When somebody called him and said, David, we got a big problem here. And just spilled the whole thing out of what Michael was doing, who Michael knew, who Michael hung with, and everything else. I just wonder what it was like at that house that night for him.
Can something that monumental be kept a secret for all this time?
Well,
with all the dirt diggers that are out there, reporters.
There are a lot of people who still think Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone.
And really, it could have been
Well, and that was a different time when you could hide things easier.
Yeah, but sooner or later, I mean, even then in subsequent years, stuff comes out.
It seems to me it could be as simple as a conversation between a very tight-knit group of people, Stern, Jordan, and maybe no one else, in this scenario, if we believe it's true, and he just says, look, I can't keep all this under the rug anymore. You know, there's things bubbling up over here.
But I can a year and a half later?
I don't know, maybe, right? Like, if, and maybe it's nothing, it's just, hey, stop doing this. And the only way that I think you could stop doing this is if you go away to the country for a little while, like Wallace. We send you to grandma's house
but
for a couple years.
He didn't get out of the media spotlight.
I guess that's true. He was still on the cover of SI. Really, I'm not even sure I believe Mike and Grego's conspiracy theory. It's more to me just imagining. And it's not like this wasn't the 50s, you know, this was not that long ago for me to imagine if, and yes, the easiest one to say is LeBron. If LeBron was testifying at a trial like that, or if LeBron had checks from him to a guy who was found murdered, a bail bondsman, or if LeBron, it's just amazing to me that that stuff doesn't follow him around more. And you, if you even bring
Jordan,
it up, you're viewed, yeah, MJ, you're viewed as a hater and a person who's taking a very negative stance, as a great man once said. To me, I just kind of think it's awesome. I think it's awesome that the guy was running around with people with mob and underworld connections and also still reeling off, you know, a title anytime he wanted to. I think it's cool more than anything, but kind of weird it didn't really ever stick to him, and the evidence is very clear.
Yeah, and we will never know now, I don't think. I don't think we will ever get the whole full 100% story on this.
Just doesn't make sense. Him leaving for 2 years just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't add up. When you put the picture in the frame of everything else that we know about Michael Jordan, this just does not compute.
I would guess never you're has, watching the documentary, will. Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're kind of, it seems like they're greasing the wheels here for next episode to deal with him leaving, and they're kind of laying out. And you also have to remember, Jordan's people had to give a thumbs up to everything in this documentary.
Oh, of course.
It seems like they're laying out the thought that things are becoming overwhelming for him. And
that would be the simplest explanation, right? If you just, Occam's razor, or whatever, just say, I'm beat down.
The pressure is just becoming too much.
That
I just can't handle
so
it.
Big, just being Michael Jordan is.
But the gambling was part of that, though, right?
Yes,
a lot of the reasons, people
it
following
was.
You to courthouses and people digging through your dirt and the book and Ahmad Rashad, you're putting on sunglasses. So even in that scenario where you say he went away just because he was overwhelmed and just sick of dealing with the S, that somewhat is related to the fact that he was running with people that the league didn't want him running with anymore.
Yeah, and there's no telling how many guys, how many shady cats would show up and hang around outside the Bulls room after games and stuff like that and just go up to people who might know and go, where's Mike? Where's Mike? I got to talk to Mike.
Like, I don't remember our mindset back then. Like I said, I don't think I was at an age that I was just locked in. I was probably in Mexico trying to find that mushroom field. But, like, did we think, oh, he'll be back at some point? Or did we think he's gone forever?
I don't know. I didn't know what to think about that. I really had a hard time talking myself into the idea that he was gone forever. But I was also pretty dug in on the idea that they made him do this. You know, I really hadn't given the detail of it too much thought, but even back then I was pretty convinced that you didn't just, if you're Michael Jordan, you don't just go away to play minor league baseball in mid-career.
What's the timeline on his dad dying? Isn't that all tied into this theory?
Well, that's an even more extreme one, but yeah, I mean, the fact, you know, that his dad was gambling with him a lot.
Did his dad die before his retirement?
Yeah. His dad died the summer. He retired in, like, October before the season started. So his dad died after, I want to say, after the third title. I think I have that right. Does that check out or no?
And then
I think that sounds about right.
And there's a thought that that's a mob tie-in?
Well, I mean, that's probably, it's pretty crackpotty. But those guys, as people often will, have both said that the guys who were charged, that they were carrying out something for someone else. Now, maybe that's what you say.
The guys that killed
his dad.
His dad?
Yeah.
Because this past documentary also had, or this week's episode had a thing, you know, when he went to Atlantic City, he was with his dad.
Right.
So his dad's his gambling buddy.
Yeah, and they said that his dad was always really hard on him about a lot of things, but never about gambling. Like, that was something that they kind of had together.
Because he bankrolled it.
You know. Who knows?
So, well, count me among the unconvinced. Count me among the never will be convinced.
Regarding this documentary being a bit of, you know, Jordan slanted, Ken Burns, I think, publicly said he would never do a documentary if it was being produced by the subject.
No, of course he wouldn't.
Like, the subject had to sign off on it before, you know, allowing it to reach the public. So, yeah, it's going to make Isaiah look bad. It's going to make
look who's
Jerry
doing
Krause
it.
Look bad.
Ask Kiss PN is doing it.
Ooh.
Ooh.
There's the hard line. All right, Mike. Well, we appreciate you joining us here in the Hang Zone. We would love to have you back sometime.
Say the word, boys. I am here for you.
All right. Tell Shelley I said hi.
I will.
There he is, Mike Reiner, here on Bad Radio, at least Bad Radio for now.